Yeah, I don't even know. Do we even have like anything figured out?
What do you mean? For what?
This show.
Mm-mm, absolutely not.
Welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams.
So I guess in the absence of the fray, it's down to me to welcome everybody to the Game of Nodes. So welcome. Coming to you today live, Usurper and Null. We are, I'm early morning, Null Serp's late in the afternoon, or what, mid-afternoon? Yeah, he's having a nice wine. I'm having
a drink.
Fucking coffee. Try and like, you know, kickstart the day. I'm done with my baby duties for the early part.
We
got shots yesterday. So actually it was interesting. We went to the doctor. The doctor says, all right, you get your vaccines. Yeah, we give vaccines over here. We're not like flat earthers or anything. So we're getting damn shots. And yeah, so the nurse is like, you know, all babies take this stuff differently. Good chance he's going to be like irritable for the rest of the day, you know.
Yeah, right.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Small fever, maybe some reaction.
Yeah, exactly. Like keep an eye on his heat. So like every 30 seconds, we've got a little fucking... Right.
Just get a little, oh, like that? You mean the little laser thing, or like a
like the little infrared fucking thermometer thing that's like
getting a click in the face,
like scanning his barcode every fucking 30 seconds. Anyway, so we got the shots, which were pretty hilarious. My partner, she's like, I got to go outside, so
couldn't watch it.
And I mean, you don't want to see your little bundle of joy like lose his shit, tough. Right? Yeah. And I mean, they do go pretty hard too. And so, you know, there's an oral one and one in each leg for this round, right? We didn't get the meningococcal one yet because it's a little bit early.
Yeah.
And 6 months or something, probably. So anyway, you stab them in the leg with this thing, man. They go fucking bright red. They stop breathing for a second and then they just go ape shit.
So she was standing outside the door. Did she hear all this?
Yeah. Yeah.
She heard it. Did she come running in?
Yeah. and then so you give him a feed, right? Shuts right up immediately. That's it.
Yeah.
He's like, done.
I'm good. Yeah. Back in the saddle.
Completely forgets what was going on. He's like,
on that boob, it's all good.
some sort of ache in my leg, it's all good. Safest
place in the world.
Yeah. Went for a walk in the park. And then came home and he slept the entire rest of the day. Like,
did he?
Didn't hear a peep from him. He woke up once for a feed. And that was it. And then again at night for a feed. So,
do you wake up normal today? Like activity levels and all that kind of stuff, or still dragging a little bit?
Well, he was like a little bit irritable.
Yeah.
Probably earlier than usual today, but it's probably because he fucking slept so much yesterday.
Sure.
But I don't know. He's probably like farting from 2 a.m. Just like just squirming around and farting for like a good 3 hours.
Is he in a bassinet, like in where you guys are sleeping, or do you guys have him someplace else and you guys sleep there?
Yeah, bassinet. Just next door. Like in the same room. Just next to the
bed. Same room. Well, it's too much because otherwise it's too much to get out of bed to, especially when he's feeding in the middle of the night, right? You want to have him close. So
yeah, my partner still like usually gets up though.
Yeah.
Because I think she tries not to wake me up too much so I can do the morning shift and stuff. So
yeah, you guys.
And I don't really hear her actually. She's pretty good at it. And it's just like when he starts making the noises, she just scoops him up and takes him next door, gives him a feed, puts him back down.
Yeah.
And then I get like the 4 a.m. He starts going at 4 a.m. usually. So just get up and give him his feed. We watch a bit of YouTube.
Hang out. Does he fall asleep again, aren't you?
Usually, yeah. Maybe after. Yeah. He's active for like a couple of hours and then he'll sort of doze off again. We go and read the book and get in the little play gym thing in the morning. Do some tummy time and look in the mirror.
Yeah.
All that shit. You know, rattle the
good
shit.
Good stuff, man.
Oh, fucking. Oh.
Those are his first shots, right?
No. So.
Is this month one? Where are we now? What's the age?
Six weeks.
All right.
So immediately after they get born here, they just fill them full of shit as well. So.
I don't think you
like a vitamin K shot, and as well as like some other vaccines.
I don't think we have any shots at birth here. They do like the there's a vitamin K, I think it's a vitamin K drop, like an eye drop that goes in, to like instantly get soaked in vitamin K. And I don't think there's anything at birth. I think there's something at one, I think it's usually in the months. Usually some at 4 weeks. I just can't remember what's what, but yeah, there's a lot of shots in the first year. I remember that. Just take some time to get through different things. Plus you guys are, I guess, I don't know if we did like flu and that kind of stuff for at that age. I don't remember how that worked for those, but at least all the other vax. Takes a while.
Yeah. I think we got like a pretty regimented program here. Queensland government loves to, pay for it and stuff. Your baby full of shit. So I'm dead. Fuck it.
I'm done.
Yeah. I got all that shit and I didn't fucking, I'm still not receiving 5G so yet.
Funny.
Gotta have a,
I'm down.
Separate device still. Fuck. Come on, guys. Figure it out.
Do we have any blocks on any blocks on the lure yet or no?
I didn't look. I looked to make sure that we're doing the page file thing and then I was like,
I shut all the alerts off in that chain, I think.
That's the thing I was gonna say to you. This is the wrong server. So we were talking Zabbix and a lot of development, a lot of things happening on the monitoring scene these days, new ideas coming through. Anyway, one of the most annoying things is when there's like a slow upgrade, right? Because it's not just nodes back up. It misses out on that 3 minute window before you get like I think it's like a minute and a half, right? So doing 30 second polling and then there's misses three number before it's like a no data alert.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, my idea is that now that we've started the governance monitoring, right? So that's
fancy.
I've been keeping an eye on that as well. It is picking up the governance like proposals. So it is picking those up. So that's step one. Need to filter out all the other crap though. We were going to keep those, weren't we? So we can monitor whether the vote's been done or not.
Or at least because it all depends on whether I can monitor if the vote happened, right? That makes sense. So if I haven't voted on something, I'd like to be known. But if I have to do two things, right? I have to go vote and I got to turn this fucking thing off. That's no good.
So for those listening and watching as well, I don't know, Zabbix is just a monitoring platform. This is what me and Cert both use for our main monitoring platform for all of our node operations. It's not like prolific, particularly like in the...
Well, it's extremely prolific, just not in this industry.
Yeah.
We use it for. Yeah.
In the node ops world, it is not very prolific.
No.
I have noticed that some of the validators that I respect a lot use it, and the ones that I don't use it. It's just, I guess, the way it is. But anyway... At every opportunity, we shill Zabbix and try to get people. Well, I mean, not really try to get people. More not just flex sure, on them man. That our shit's better than theirs. So, and what we're talking about now is just, it's a constant development. We come up with ideas of how we can improve things and make sure that we're in the know with everything because, you get shitloads of nodes and lots of networks. It's very hard to stay on top of everything. And to have this do it for you, for the most part, is... the aim of the game. We have an issue it's not an issue at the moment, but a life improvement that we're trying to make is now monitoring on-chain governance, and then through that monitoring give certain alerts under certain conditions about the happenings in governance. So one thing that we want initially was that we're going to monitor governance, and then we are going to monitor if we have voted for the governance. Mm-hmm. So, the idea is, I suppose, that once a governance proposal pops up, which we use Discovery for, which is a mechanism that just will automatically find these things once it's told to do so, like programmed to do so. So it'll find the latest proposal, bring it up, and then check the wallet, see if it's voted. If it hasn't, give a warning. And then once it's voted, the warning go away. And then once the governance proposal's done, the governance proposal disappear. I guess that's the flow that we're going for that, right? Is that your understanding? Yeah,
or eventually that it just votes yes on every single fucking thing and then tweets about it and then then calls out other validators for not voting.
That's entirely possible, right?
And a separate tweet. Yeah. Why the fuck hasn't blah, blah, blah? Who has more VP?
So yeah, we can use Zabbix to send an alert to Ansible.
Yeah.
What's it called? Ansible rulebooks, which can then run a playbook to do exactly that.
I think, and that's where we're since a lot of us build binaries, and there's no direct tie between the upgrade and the binary version. It's not a field that's in there.
That's the problem that we're bumping up against.
It'd be great to have a GitHub commit in each of those. That would be amazing because this is the commit that we're looking for. And even if that commit changed or didn't change, but if that commit, then we could at least take some action off that. Now there are in those upgrades. I'm not sure if every chain does this, but you can link to pre-built binaries that the team is providing,
and then it's basically in the metadata. A lot of the time, it's in.
I think it's a field, actually, isn't it? I thought it was something that was actually structured in that prop.
It used to be. I think they changed it at some point. I'm not 100% sure.
But you can basically parse that out. So I can look for a ARM64 version of yada yada and go grab it and go use it and put it and bring that in, and then I could probably automate that whole structure from start to back. I would know what the binary is. I would know all that kind of stuff. And I thought isn't there a version of CosmoVisor does that exact same fucking thing? I thought that the latest version of CosmoVisor, if that binary is in there, you can go grab it out of there and something. I think CosmoVisor does that too. I've never used it.
So CosmoVisor has always done that, except everyone turns it off because it's like...
I've never used it, yeah.
There's like a bit of a stigma, I guess.
Too easy to fuck it up.
Well, it's too easy for someone to insert something in there which is malicious. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know if we would take automatic action. It would be nice to find a way to automate that process where I'm not updating an Ansible file with the right version or an upgrade name and all that kind of stuff, which I think I could do actually. I could probably find a way to at least do some part of that automated. That is a process. Process would be vote exists, vote gets turns into a small alert, I go take action on that, vote, alert goes away, right? That's kind of the idea. And the other thing you could do is you could even say if that upgrade alert exists that came out of governance, I could do two things. One, I could go check and see if that vote exists. Number two, I could have it go check the node and all the nodes that match that to say, hey, for this node, is that folder exist? And is there a binary in that folder? That's the other thing you can do too, is to say, is that the alert won't go away until A, you voted, and B, you've staged it, which would be actually a nice little addition to that too, for it to double check and make sure it's staged, which is not really, that's a really easy thing to do, I think, because we would.
Checking the staging is, that was something we talked about. I think that's entirely possible.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. So, the funny thing is you got to keep like node. So we've talked about this as well. You got to keep, the node monitoring separate to the validator monitoring, because you've got you might run 20 nodes or something for the same network. Some things you want to know on the validator level, like whether or not you voted or not and that type of shit. And then some things you want to know on the node level, like whether or not you've staged the upgrade and that type of stuff with CosmoVisor, depending on how you're doing it. So, the complexity there becomes like, do you then start polling governance with both, or do you have an add-on somewhere that you can then like see that through the other monitors?
So that's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, because everything's sort of broken up into host and stuff, right? So, that's the thinking is going on there at the moment to try and think about how that can be done.
Yeah, it's almost like you need a third party source that has if that governance exists, and then that third party data source knows that the governance is out there, and then once all the nodes are updated,
which wouldn't be hard to do. Like we could make that API, but I mean you don't want to be relying on another piece of software. Isn't really that much of a critical thing.
It's not
like, but still, you don't want to rely on other shit.
I don't even care about governance, number one. Quote me on that. And number two, I haven't really missed. I mean, this is not really that valuable for mainnet. Mainnet gov props. We haven't missed a mainnet upgrade, I think, ever. Testnet, fuck yeah. Like testnet, those things are not like, I don't really pull those at all. I don't have, like, I have mainnet upgrades up on my board above me, so I know what's going on there, but that's not, I don't really watch. It's not really a good source of that data, to be honest, unless it's on chain. And even though sometimes, like, we get caught on upgrades that don't happen via GovProps, like that happens, like, because we run RPC for a bunch of chains that we don't validate on, and there'll be like a hot fix something or other. Hey, this isn't state breaking, but it might break a state at some point down the line, and we miss it. And the next thing you know, got to rebuild nodes because some fucking thing.
I think the best thing we've added to the Solana host monitor is that fucking the version upgrades. Like they be upgrading that shit all the time.
yeah. So that's another interesting thing is that's not really, I think, valid for, since everything is state breaking. It's not that valid, I think, for the Cosmos ecosystem. Although we could do something that looks at the latest release out of GitHub. I did add that on all my EVM chains. But EVM is tough because you have both a consensus engine as well as an execution. And a lot of these teams don't necessarily, they might package those into a bundle to say, like, I think a good example is, I could look up right here. I might have deleted them. Maybe Linea or Scroll or something else. Scroll might say, hey, we're on version 0.043. Well, 0.043 of Scroll really means node 1.0 and geth 108, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? And yeah. So whenever if I'm querying GitHub, I'm getting a package number, but that package number doesn't exist anywhere on chain. It's just a made up type of thing. So there's a lot of that kind of bullshit going on. But like, there was just a new version of geth that just popped yesterday, and I got alerted on 20 fucking things because now there's a geth update, right? Because the execution engine knows that it's been upgraded, which is actually great. Like, that, I like to be able to know that. But every chain might not say that they're ready for that. So that might be okay in the L1s, but the L2s, they might need to do, just because geth updated doesn't mean that that their own version of the consensus engine is going to work with that. So that happened actually on, it wasn't geth, it was opgeth on the optimism side. So there's a bunch of chains that use opgeth. So that changed there, but that doesn't necessarily mean that all the subchains that use opgeth and all the optimism stack are ready for that upgrade. So it doesn't, it's all kind of a fucking mess, to be honest. So Solana works perfect because there's one fucking binary and you know if you're on it or not. Like, we just got alerted on that 2 days ago, right? Or whatever it was. Like, it's just a new version. And then you can go see if it's worthwhile and what you want to do there, which is really great.
Yeah, and then you can delete the fucking Discord.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And well, that team also does a really good job with tagging, and they do a good job with latest releases, and they do a good job. Like, that's been quite good. And other ones are just, they're just more complicated when you have multiple engines and all that kind of shit. Just turns into just trying to track it down. But as long as, I mean, I'm not, for the most part, those things I'm not too worried about. I just get worried about like state breaking changes. State breaking changes on the EVM ecosystem are usually pretty far between, and you have usually a pretty decent knowledge of when that's occurring, but maybe you don't know what version is actually going to be the one that's going to get you past the fork.
Usually know when you're doing shits.
Yeah, which over there, well, right there, you're not like, we try to there's a couple flags you can do where if it knows that there's a breaking, it'll actually shut down, because otherwise it would corrupt the database, which was a fucking disaster.
Yeah, so I think with Solana, they usually actually in the Discord, they say you got to upgrade by this epoch or you're fucked.
Yeah. Or you're fucked, right? You get dropped. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which might be before, well, that sounds like a PagerDuty notification there.
Yeah.
I know that number. Hopefully that's not Allura.
It's fucking Allura.
Is it?
Yeah, so it says stalled. So I'm guessing I passed the.
Oh, yeah. You definitely.
Now
yeah.
Just waiting for other nodes.
That's right. Yeah.
Not even.
I haven't brought up TM Top or anything like that. That chain, man. It is.
I put the time out on a node stall to like 10 minutes.
Well, I turned up. Yeah, no, I turned it off.
Oh, did you?
I turned it off. I just disabled the node stall completely. I just disabled that alert on Allura just because, dude, we had like 5 minute blocks, like 7 minute blocks in there and shit. There would be one that was 15 minutes every once in a while. I don't want to know about that.
And it all happens when I'm sleeping too. They get alerts at like 2 a.m. It's like fucking
Allura shit the bed.
Shit.
With a 12-minute block or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, it's kind of fucking annoying. But I mean, they're going to fix that up now. They're looking at doing some, they're going to add like a gas limit and stuff. But so anyway, back to the governance. The idea I had, I never got to the fucking idea that I was going to tell you about. Because we talked about all that other shit before, but my grand idea. So, yeah. You know, it occurred to me this morning when I was getting, you know, an alert when Alora started upgrading, and obviously this like a no data alert, right? So I propose that I'm not sure if this is possible, but potentially you can then, once you've collected those upgrade plans from the chain on chain, so once it is a plan, pick it up with low level discovery, note the block, keep monitoring the chain blocks, and then once it gets to the upgrade height, have an alert or just a information that comes up, like an information alert, so you can make that out of the, you know, pager duty alerts, and then put the node into maintenance mode, the host into maintenance mode. So that you're not getting alerts.
How the fuck you put a note into a maintenance mode?
Yeah, like I've got, I got hosts that go into maintenance mode every day because of the backup scripts. Like sometimes it takes an hour to fucking restart.
Where the fuck is that?
An archive.
Is that in Zabbix?
Yeah, man, Zabbix.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so actually I think you can do it with the API as well. So I've been thinking about various things with that. Maintenance, baby.
That's a good idea. I like that idea. I thought about this too, actually.
You can go maintenance mode, it'll keep collecting data, but it won't make alerts.
Right, just to shut the alerts off. Yeah. The other idea I had with that was, I mean, one thing that we do on all other chains except for Cosmos-based chains is I always ping a public RPC, right? So I always look at the gap between me and quote-unquote public. So I did add that to the Cosmos base thing, and I just basically, it's easy on mainnet because you can just kind of go, you can kind of, thanks to Cosmos Directory and the great work there, you can go grab a base thing and just pull the network thing in and say, hey, I'm going to hit this every minute, right? I'm going to hit this chain every minute. It doesn't have to hit the shit out of it. I just want to get the latest height every minute from this chain. And then do a gap between where this node is, the specific node, right, and that thing. And if that, so what you could do is do that same stall, but if the public is also stalled, then make that a dependency to say, hey, I'm not going to alert on that unless the public is also stalled. So you can do something along that lines to say, if the public is stalled and I'm stalled, that's okay. And then, or it might be okay, but if it happens for 15 minutes, then I want to know. Or if it happens for 30 minutes, then I want to know. Where I might not be worried because the public is stalled and I'm stalled. Now, that's not a no data situation because you still have to check if there's no data if the public is down, because publics are really, I think, like public RPCs.
Yeah, they're like all over the place. Yeah.
They're all over the place. Like they're fucking miserable, which is why we don't run them.
wouldn't be too hard. We can just make two items.
It'd be really easy.
Basically running or stalled.
Yeah. It's a real simple start of that. And then say if it's stalled and also the public stalled, it's a pretty good guess that that's not the case. And then maybe I'm going to wait then for 15 minutes before I do an alert. Where otherwise, if the public is moving and that gap grows, if that gap grows after three pulls, I want to know, because then something's definitely wrong with that. It's relying on the public, but honestly, for the most part, if you're hitting a public once a minute or every 30 seconds, just for a height, it's no big deal. Like you're literally talking what, like, fucking 120 hits a minute or something like that. It's no big deal. So that's another option to do too. I do that on the EVM side. And then there's a order within there. I think we did it in Solana too, don't we? Where we kind of look and see what the public height is, and then also do a gap analysis and if that gap grows and all that kind of shit. But I do want to know
if you know that. I assume we're doing that.
I can't remember if I'm doing that in Solana or not. No, I think I do a gap in Solana. I can go look, but that's a good idea. So that's something we can do. I've never actually worked to, yeah, I have a gap height difference to public within Solana, which is pretty good since those blocks are fucking fast, right? Well, they're 300 milliseconds, well, 480 milliseconds.
Solana is a real fucking pain in the ass because you can like fall behind real quick when you when a node, just restarting a node, you can get like 1,000 blocks behind, and it doesn't more catch up very fast. You can throw all the hardware in the world at it, it still just does not catch up very fast. So
if you restart that binary, it's 15 minutes easy,
yeah,
no matter what. Like yeah. you have a 15-minute outage, which is tough. Like, and these other things that we run, like say if I restart that, I miss like, well, it's 400 milliseconds, but we're probably missing like, I don't know,
a handful,
15 seconds of blocks, maybe like not even. So it takes a long time for it to, it does that network check and it does all that shit and it connects out to all these fucking peers. And I don't know, it's kind of like a, it's like starting like a fucking 60 Chevy. Like you just gotta pump the gas a couple times. You gotta
like start my 70s fucking lawnmower.
You gotta lean on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good idea. I think the governance idea is a good idea though. Like it, like that maintenance idea is pretty interesting.
I don't know if you can enter maintenance through like
through the API mechanism.
Yeah, you can with the API. Yeah. Well, you have to put in a window. Is like, I don't think you can just like start maintenance, stop maintenance. I think you have to like create a maintenance window, which is how I use it right at the moment. I don't know if there's any other mechanism with maintenance to be able to put it into maintenance. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe you can apply a tag and then remove the tag. I don't know if you can do that with alerts.
Filter out the tag because it's, you know, it's a known upgrade height or something like that.
Yeah. Like, you know, status upgrade or something like that. And then filter that tag. Because we filter certain, like I just have tags that I have for filtering out alerts for things right that I don't want to be annoyed by. Just add the tag and then it no longer does the alerting.
This is the quality of node operations that you get from professional validators.
We spend a lot of time scratching our head about how to not be alerted.
If you're bored right now, you should delegate to the two of us because there's not a lot of, I mean, honestly, there's a lot of good work that I do for monitoring and stuff like this. I think we sometimes take it a little bit to the extreme, I think, versus others, but it's all good.
Well, I think most just rely on other people's tools and creations, which is a little bit disappointing, but also like, you know, how much value is there in recreating the wheel 35,000 times? So,
right.
I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, but also you should make an effort to know what's under the hood and how it works.
I would like to, there's some tender duty items I would like to bring into Zabbix though. Like consecutive missed blocks, like half that functionality, I think,
or half consecutive missed blocks is very difficult in Zabbix.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think it's possible, to be honest.
Half that functionality we have, consecutive missed blocks would be a challenge. I mean, we're only pulling every, whatever, 15, 30 seconds. So I don't know how you would do that unless you're.
It would be so nice if there was like some additional functionality in Zabbix to be able to listen to a WebSocket and do some stuff off it. But could you imagine how many fucking WebSockets you'd be listening to? Like, it's probably. Well, I mean,
that's what we do now.
Yeah, but we do like a HTTP poll, right?
No, I meant like in tender duty and those types of things.
Oh, right? Yeah. But I mean, as the, you know, this type of system, I don't think would be great for listening to.
I mean, you could create a
third party API that listens and then reports back. But
sure. I mean, they work well together, so I don't really have much of a problem with it. Like, I don't mind. I mean, tender duty's been great. Like, even still use it and still get alerts based off of it. I stopped with the RPC alerts and all that kind of shit because I don't really need tender duty warning me about that stuff because I have different solutions for that. But for like consecutive missed blocks or things like that, like we were missing on, I forget what the hell fucking testnet it was. It just needed a restart. Like it was a shit in the bed, restart it and everything was fine. But I would have had to get to, if that was Zabbix only, I wouldn't have known about that until it got to like 5%. You know what I mean? Mm. Where I knew about it within, like I missed 25 blocks in a row. I knew about it instantly. I restarted within 4 seconds and it was back. You know what I mean? Where at 5%, that thing would have been shit in the bed for, I don't know, a while. And and maybe we could always lower that too. But the percentages are tough because it's always like, I mean, even at 1%, I don't know. It's difficult to, it's a difference between time series data and like just taking a point of time slice, right? And trying to make decisions based off of it.
Ah, oh, yes. Fuck it.
Anyway.
I'm a little bit.
We could talk Zabbix all day.
I know. It's probably something that absolutely no one listening to this would find interesting or valuable whatsoever.
I know. I know. It's fucking good though. It's such good stuff.
Yeah.
It makes
It's a hard sell though. Like when, so I remember shilling Zabbix to you and others, and
I was
like, oh man, Grafana works great.
Grafana works great. Grafana works great. It does. But each of those alerts is handcrafted, and when you there's temple ties, don't get me wrong.
This was exactly my selling point. That was the fucking thing that I hated about Grafana was that the alerting is bespoke every fucking time.
Every fucking time. I have in my Grafana, I have this like node fucking dump, which basically takes every single node of a type, like every Cosmos node, and it dumps it all into one fucking miserable graph with 1,000 fucking lines on it. And if something goes above X, then it alerts. That's really what you have to do. So you can have all your beautiful dashboards, and then separately, you kind of have to have like a oh shit dashboard that has all these fucking ugly ass graphs on it. In case something explodes, do this.
I hate it so much. I hate it.
But I mean,
I don't have any Grafana anyway. By the way,
I use a lot. Well, one thing I do like about that is like for visualizations of chain performance and node performance. When it comes to like some specific blockchain data, the graphing in there is so much better than Zabbix.
Of course. V7 has some different graphing options.
That's one reason I want to kind of move forward. Because the stuff that I've built over time in Grafana and like the visualizations of understanding when something's wrong, like how do I figure out exactly what the fuck is wrong? That's the tool that you want to figure out what the fuck is wrong. It's really difficult to do that in Zabbix. There's just not enough. You're creating an item for every item and can't just query off there's five new metrics in Prometheus I want to bring in. I want to just drag those in and graph those against each other and find blah, 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 blah like that. It takes like no time. And that's really valuable. And I know you can also bring, you can also bring Zabbix data into Grafana, right? Like you can use Zabbix as a data source, I think.
You can. Yeah.
That might be interesting too, because
but it's not. Is it? It's not.
I don't know. It's not time series, though, right?
Yeah, it's because it's not time series. It wouldn't work. You're far better off just to pull the fucking Prometheus time series from the node.
But I was looking at also. I don't want to turn this into a fucking Zabbix episode because you're in my relationship.
Given any opportunity, we will fucking talk about it.
Our relationship together is at least 25% Zabbix. There is that time series database that runs next to Postgres, right? That you can use, and they'll actually compress time series data down, and like it does a bunch of, it doesn't work exactly like Prometheus, but there's like a add-on that you can use for time series. Because I'm looking at that with going to 7. It's called like time. I forget what the fuck it's called. I should know what it is. Somebody may know. Yell at me here in a second. But there's a pretty cool add-on to that. And then so you can actually use that to push use that to push all Zabbix time scale data into that. And then it has some compression to it. It has much faster querying, like 80% faster querying, and a whole bunch of other types of benefits to that. But it's outside of Postgres. So you can look at it. So it basically, it's not necessarily 100% the same as how Prometheus works though. Like it is time series, but I think it's also still taking, well, I guess Prometheus is taking slices of time as well. But I'm looking at that for this big upgrade as I'm kind of building a new architecture for how we're going to use Zabbix and all that kind of stuff. Cause that looks pretty cool to be able to use.
The fucking upgrade.
I know.
Yeah. I was so close the other day. And then I was like, do I really want to be doing this at 10 o'clock at night with a baby?
Timescale DB, that's what it's called. I was just looking at our dependency on this fucking tool set. This tool set, we pull right now, we pull around 700 values a second. Hmm. Okay, so 700, what is that? 700 times 60 times 60 times 24. So we're pulling 60.5 million values a day.
That's quite some values
of all that shit, which is pretty, like when you think about how much data is getting pulled in and how much monitoring and triggers are going with that, that's really the value of this tool set. And like how I think it's a good complement to anything, whoever's running any sort of monitoring, like there is a fuckload of things that are being watched right? And sometimes that can be alert overload, because I've found that with like upgrades and, you know, other types of things, or smart data or this or that. And like, you can get
holy a little shit, bit too man. Much. When I dumped the database, like the day before yesterday, it locked the database, and fucking the hundreds of alerts came through on PagerDuty. Hundreds. But I don't know. The server must must not like it when you disconnect it from the back end. So yeah, man.
Lock, shit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that lock is just like fucking, it just made everything shit. All the no datas just went fucking ballistic.
Yeah. I guess if it can't make a connection, it's a no data, right? So it doesn't see a record. So therefore,
yeah,
I'm letting you know.
Totally fucking lost it. It's hilarious.
I know.
Yeah. So our newsman is incredibly busy at work at the moment. He's taken
on two jobs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, two jobs. I don't know if it's two jobs, but he's taken on a new role in his other job. And then
good for
him. It's quite intense at the moment, I believe. So
hopefully it's a good
move. Maybe the other job's being a dad. I don't know.
Mm.
Yeah. I do know that since we've been talking about our monitoring, absolutely no one has fucking made a comment. So they're either fully engaged and absolutely loving this content, or do not give a fuck and are also watching SpongeBob on the side.
We do have some other things, right?
I don't know. Do we? It has been pretty, pretty slow at the moment. There's new networks and stuff, but, you know, everything. I've noticed that there is like a bit of a hold on anything launching. There is a lot of like faff in the background. People are like, well, we're ready to go, except we're just sort of not going to for now.
Right.
Well, we have waiting for a stronger market. There are going to be a fucking lot of launches when the market improves, like, you know, when number go up more consistently.
Well, I think the consistency, that's a good point, because like we've had some nice little pumps here in the last couple of weeks of like, I mean, they've been pretty large swings, to be honest, on a bunch of tokens that we look at, but they haven't lasted very long. Like they've been under 2 or 3 hours types of pumps, right? Like it's been like
very intermittent.
You need some limit orders set the day before type of shit. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't know exactly. And like Ethereum, we're back down. Well, actually it says 2,500 now. I thought it was under the 22s or 23s earlier today. So hasn't been great. It's been all over
the place. Ethereum is, I really thought it would have had like a bit more of a bounce back from, you know, the 3,000s when, because it was a pretty savage drop from like, what, 30, 33, 34 down to like, what, 22, 23. Yeah. And it hasn't, you know, it really has not recovered from that for months. So,
no.
And Bitcoin, interestingly, though, like it didn't necessarily drag a lot of, well, particularly the tokens that we monitor, we're interested in. I don't think it really drags them down that much. It did initially. A lot of those other tokens seem to be recovered to around where they were when Ethereum was tracking like 3,300, 3,400. But, you know, that's not to say that like if there is some decent price action in the Ethereum realm is likely drag up the other shit coins that we watch. So.
Right.
Which is what you want.
The other shit coins.
Yeah, well, you know, there's Bitcoin and Ethereum and then there's shit coins, right?
There's everything else. Yeah. No, I think that it, I mean, for the most, well.
And then everything that Rama watches is ultrasound shit coin.
Things are moving like 100,000% a day and then plus or minus. For the most part, there hasn't been a ton of correlation in the stuff that I'm watching. Like I have everything from like Ethereum this week down 4.5%, Helium up 16%.
Are you still watching Helium? Fucking Helium.
I still watch Helium. I still have stuff.
I feel like you've just had a massive bag of Helium you've been waiting to dump for like 5 years.
Not massive, but when we first got into that, I bought enough in to get a validator, which was 10,000 HNT at the time, which was literally such a stupid move.
Oracle moves.
It was such a 2020 move, right? Like it was so fucking 2020. So fucking 2020. And
you're like bowling off all that fucking.
It's. I mean, honestly, it's up 100. Even now, it's up 100%. So I can't complain too much, right? Like even now in it's only 3 years later, I guess 3.5 years later, something like that. But I still watch it because I just want to. But the unbonding there, my unbond period, dude, is 6 months. So if I unbond now, it's whatever it is, fucking April. So right now I'm just in a that was the going in when they made the change from HNT to a token on Solana. It was always 6 months. Actually, I think it was 6 months or it was a 6 months or a year. I forget what the original unbonding period was. It was 6 months. I think it was automatically 6 months. And then once you transferred, you can make the decision to say, I can go for 6 months or a year or 2 years. And then at the end of that period, then the timer starts and then it's another 6 months. So I'm at the lowest rate, which means I earn the least. But if I unbond today, it's ready in April. And other people might say, I'm locking in for a minimum of 2 or 3 years or more. I think it was even a longer one. It's like wind, right? Wasn't there like a 10-year option in wind? I think I still have that going.
I'm fucking deep into the wind.
Yeah. And then, so I think you could do like 2 years. And then at the end of 2 years, then you can make a decision to either re-up that or you can start a 6-month unbond. So there's, it's pretty crazy. So it takes a while. So I do watch it. I do, even though it doesn't matter because I couldn't do anything anyway. It doesn't make a difference. So, and Aptos just changed their unbonding period too. They used to be a month and they just made it 2 weeks.
Oh yeah.
They just changed theirs. Yeah. They changed the unlock period to 2 weeks and they changed the unbonding period. I guess it's in line, but the unbonding period is now 2 weeks.
Probably trying to fucking encourage. Reduce the risk, I suppose.
I think it was trying to increase staking.
Yeah, exactly. Like by reducing the risk of staking. Yeah.
Yeah. A 1 month unbonding was just too long. Right. So I think that really pushed them to do more.
Yeah. It's probably unnecessary as well. Like, you know, what if there's a mass unbonding, if it's 2 weeks or a month, like what's the difference?
I think it probably makes a difference. I don't know. I don't know if it does or not. A month. Well, actually there it's a little bit different. It's there's an unlock date. So there's an unlock date and time that exists. And then it would be it'd be exactly a month from that point. So I think you can, I think I'm not 100% sure, but I think if my date was next week, I could choose to unbond now. And then the month starts at that date. You know what I mean? Like it would start then at that point, something like that, but it doesn't matter.
So in other news, balls deep in Proxmox at the moment. Fucking it's gonna, just waving gonna, my dick around in that pool. Fucking hell. So the new rack, new servers, new problems. You
validating out of Australia.
You have to make a decision when you do this shit, don't you? Like, what are you going to use? And then, you know, there's XCPNG, there's Proxmox, vSphere, fucking, you know, if you're an idiot, there's other stuff. I was going to name shit, but you know, that's just me being a dick. So much nuance in all of these things. There's like your hardware, you know, your compute hardware, what decisions you make on like RAM, CPU, then you've got like networking, then you've got storage, then you've got like your storage software, like which way are you going to go with that? So many different decisions, man. And we've been like working our way through all of this shit. And I think we're almost there. It's starting to look good. We're getting really good performance out of, man, Ceph is just some shit.
I ran it for a little bit. It was a while ago though. I forgot most of it. I remember it being a bit, not shady. I remember it being like, how the fuck is this actually working?
It is. It's just the black box of distributed storage, man. Just like add the drives to it, and you're like, all right, do your thing.
Like, all right, I have a YAML file that says you're going to use it. I remember being a little bit like that, but I mean, vSphere is the same way. Like, you don't understand how the fucking data stores work. I remember that.
It's like a Megatron of storage, you know, like all that shit is just sort of all mashed together, and then it's just, like awesome fucking Megatron. Just
throw it into the bin, like throw it over the fence, and hopefully, at some point, it'll be there when you want it. Yeah.
So like people do just add fucking like spinners and SSD and whatever trash they've got lying around in the Ceph clusters, and it just creates this mishmash Megatron of bullshit fucking storage, right? Which is somehow still performant. Like it just figures it all out. It's like, oh, this is slow. I'll stick some shit that's not been used much over there. And then like, you know, this is needs to be fast over here.
Crazy. And
it's just some crazy shit. But, you know, we don't do that over here at King knows. We got fucking, we got old Gen 5 storage, baby. We're getting, like it's network bound at the moment. We're, you know, the read writes are 3 gigabytes per second, which is about the limit of my 25 gig network. So yeah. Upping that to 50 gig today, my new cables get here.
Really?
Yeah. So we got, we're ganging the NICs. So we have 50 gig for the storage network and then 20 gig for the management network. Because we're actually, when you migrate nodes around, they use the management network. You can set it to use different networks, but
sure.
I thought, fuck it, we'll bond 210 gigs for the management network so that it's got A, redundancy, and B, more bandwidth to
But it's actually, it's still live like during that migration, right?
So live migration. So yeah. I did a test, and on the gig network, the thing is it has to transfer the RAM, right?
Right.
So it has to snapshot the RAM and then transfer it. So obviously the more RAM you have, the longer that takes. And on a gig network, that can take a bit of time. If you got like, you know, half a gig of RAM, half a terabyte of RAM or something, you're going to be waiting all day. But for smaller nodes, it'll snapshot it and then send it across and then start it up again, right? So I think when I was pushing around a VM to just test it, and it was having 14 nanoseconds of actual downtime when it like did the switch. So yeah, it was taking like not very long to transfer. It wasn't a lot of RAM. It was like 8 gig of RAM or something just to test it.
Yeah,
and then just. There's a switch.
That might be similar to vSphere. Like I've never really noticed any sort of like the node's always active in those periods. I never found anything.
Yeah, like if you have a ping screen up or something, you don't see it stop.
You wouldn't see anything like that. Yeah. But even like I've had like running blockchain nodes and other types of things. I never noticed missing a block or anything else during that period.
It is pretty impressive, I think.
That's cool. That's good. Yeah. The only thing, I mean, you're kind of building a SAN with Ceph. And so the largest outages in network and service history have always been SAN related. So not to freak you out, but like once that thing dies or like something happens and everything that's associated to that cannot be started and you're trying to figure out how the fuck am I going to rebuild this shit?
Well, it's distributed SAN. So it's like, you know, you've got redundancy across hardware nodes as
all
well.
SANs do.
Like all the
it's a definition of SAN.
But, I mean, you can lose a fair bit of stuff before it'll stop working. So,
yeah. You should pull some cables, see what happens.
Do what?
You should pull some cables.
Yeah. I've pulled nodes. I've turned off nodes to see if it still keeps working.
Okay, good.
It doesn't miss a beat. Yeah.
Like kill some cables, pull a drive out. Well, you can't pull a drive out. No. Well, I guess you can't pull a drive. Those are all run of the box type of things, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Pulling drives out? Yeah. It's fine.
Just pop a couple out.
Yeah. You can pull 3 drives across the. So with mine, you can pull out 3 drives across the cluster.
Nice.
Yeah, or all of one and then some of the others. And you can definitely like hot swap networks and stuff. It doesn't affect it. Well, once we get the LACP going anyway.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
The more you think about it and the more you're like, oh, I want some redundancy there, fuck, it just keeps adding costs
and
switches.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
I'm like when I first started running stuff out of, you know, a data center, I have like this, it's, you know, like a, it's got 2.5 gig uplink and then like a gig ports. And then that was my router, right? A MikroTik RB5009, no hardware offload or anything like that. And I mean, it served fine for quite a while with what we were running on it. And then moving into like now with our own racks, own internet, that type of stuff. And then, you know, your redundancy all the way down the chain. And then so you like 2 routers, two high bandwidth switches, 2 low bandwidth switches, 2 fucking this, 2 fucking that. And then like just cables going everywhere.
We had a Cisco switch brown out, wherever the hell that was a couple weeks ago. Like you start to realize, and then that, like those types of situations, and like how then I need to manage and how am I going to reroute and like what is dependent on that. And like, there it is when you're starting to build your own data center, and it depends on like some people take that seriously, some people don't. And there's so many different layers of that type of high availability, right? Like you can, like example, you can do RAID 1.
If you're going to do HA, you have to do HA through the entire fucking chain, starting with your data center. Like,
which is really expensive. And it is just so fucking, like, not only is it expensive, but it gets complicated, and it gets complicated to the point where small issues that wouldn't affect a regular node operator affect you, because it's an HA situation. You go, oh, fuck, right? Because you're worried about, you're building around these failures, and you might have situations that are totally benign for anyone else, but for you are a big issue, because in an HA situation, it turns into a larger problem. Because it's not like a simple change, because it requires changes all the way down that stack type of idea. Like we've had the issue with PDU monitoring and a bunch of other types of things. And in our DCs, we actually, well, one of the new DCs that we run, but one of them has to have battery backup units. And so even with that, like even a BBU failing can cause like all sorts of fucking problems.
Yeah, like just 100%.
Like, because not everything has, well, I think everything we have in that rack has multiple PSs, but sometimes it can be a bit of a challenge.
Thank God the like all of the power backup is managed by the DC where we are. So we're we're two N plus one. So N plus backup, I guess. So it's like, it's very redundant. But, you know, there's multiple inlinks of dark fiber as well. Like all the carriers have multiple fiber inlets, so if someone on, you know, the south side of Brisbane digs through a cable, he's still good. Multiple inlets of power, multiple backups, they got batteries and generators, they got fucking they've even got AB on the so when you do structured cabling and cross connects, right, that you can, they've got two so one side of the room has structured cabling coming in, and then the other side of the room has structured cabling coming in. And then you can get two sets of structured cabling to your rack, which go to two separate cross-connect rooms. So patch rooms. And all the carriers come to two separate patch rooms.
Right.
So you can have like one connection from one carrier from one cross-connect, and then another from another cross connect that come in, you know, into the data halls and do two different directions, but both have dark fibers come in from two different directions as well. It's fucking insane. And this building is a bit messy though. It's a tier 4 data center, but the building is a little bit messy because it was an existing building. So it's like a fucking labyrinth when you're trying to get down to the dock and that type of shit.
It's cool.
Yeah, man, I got so lost in there.
Can I throw some hardware in there?
In my rack?
Yeah. You got power for me?
I don't even have power for me. I busted my power limit so hard when I put the latest.
Power is the most nobody gives a shit about networks or this or that or space. It's all about fucking wattage.
You know, it's really weird at this data center too, because you know how normally when you scale things, prices go down? Well, here prices go up. So like if you add a kilowatt, every time you add a kilowatt, it keeps getting more expensive per kilowatt. Yeah,
you're like, wait a second.
It's like, you know, your first bit of crack is $2.50 a kilowatt, and then your second bag of crack is fucking $3.50 a kilowatt.
Yeah,
right up to it limits out at like $5.50 a kilowatt or something like that, and then that's it.
It's like the inverse volume bargain, right?
I can tell you, it's not what I expected. Like when I said, oh, you know, what does it cost per kilowatt? And he's like, oh, you know, it's a sliding scale. And I'm like, cool.
That sounds good.
Thinking that it goes down. And he's like, it starts at 350 and it goes up from there. I'm like,
did I do that right? You're like, wait a second.
From there?
It's like, I didn't lie.
No. Yeah. And then like, I've got other friends here in Brisbane that seen my shit and they're like, want to play with some toys now. And they're like researching data centers and stuff. And they're like,
yeah.
Fuck man, I can get like a whole rack for, I don't know, like $1,000. Like, you know, we run out of a half rack here in Brisbane, and you know, even that's expensive. And they're like, we can get a whole rack down at this other data center for like, you know, half the price you're paying for your full rack. And I'm like, okay, where is it? Or where is that phone there? Yeah, there's like 45 minutes away from my house. I'm like, no, yeah. I'd rather pay more money.
Have it
in the city right next to the cookie shop.
I think we have 50 amps, I think, in one, and then we have another 10 in the other, or 10 or 15 amps. I think we have like 65 or 70 amps total.
That's a lot. I got a couple of kilowatts at the moment, but yeah. Oh, we just keep bumping it up as we need.
You keep bumping it up, right? Well, yeah. I mean, here for us, it's never, but it's like, hey, you want a 20 amp line? You want another 30 amp line? You want another 30 amp line? I can't go from like 30 to 31 because literally they drop a different fucking outlet on a different breaker, on a different structure, on a different, like, you know what I mean? Like there is, it's like, okay, so we need a new PDU for that, or I need to do something else with that, or I can go from this 30 to a 50, and our PDUs are all 50s, but like, you know, and even PDUs, like we're buying those PDUs you got, right? Those were in the rack.
Yeah. Cause
oh yeah, we bought all those.
So you pay a setup fee here. Like everything's monitored as well. So, like when you get your rack, none of the racks have anything in them. Like all the new racks, they're just new. Yeah. There's nothing in them. Yeah, unless they've been used previously, they'll still charge you a setup fee. But, you know, once people are in racks, they don't fucking leave anyway. They get a rack and then that's it. Right. But because, you know, it's like AWS, Google, like they just fucking buy like a whole data hall and then be like, yeah.
AWS is in the one that we're in. Yeah.
Yeah. So what was I going with that? Oh, yeah. So you pay a setup fee when you get the rack set up, and that they just bring everything, man. They got a fucking massive breaker they put up next at the top of your rack. Two PDUs like that stretch the entire length. The PDUs are all monitored, so you can see the kilowatts running through each PDU.
Do you monitor those or they monitor them?
They're in the web portal. I can go in there.
Can you bring them into Zavix? Because I bring ours into Zavix.
I do not think so. No.
Oh, okay. All right.
I don't think they have an API. But you can see like the inlet air temperature, humidity, all that type of shit.
Cool. So,
yeah. Usually about 25 degrees. It's pretty nice in there, unless you stand in the hot aisle, in which case you're going to fucking die real quick.
Yeah, yeah, that's nice.
It's fucking hot in there.
One of our DCs has a hot cold wall and the other one does not. So the other one is just, it's just the whole thing. Actually, it's mostly empty.
Yeah.
It's a really empty room that's overcooled. So like it's cold in there. Like it is, I don't even know. I could probably look at some drives, but I'm guessing it's probably more like 18 degrees C, something like that.
18 C?
Yeah. Fuck, like 65 degrees.
If they don't have hot cold, they must be like spending some money on cooling.
Yeah. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
it's a pretty large air handler. And there's not a ton of room in there. Like we're in the same DC as like, so in the US and Amazon, I don't know if they do that there, but like they show, well, obviously, let me rephrase that. In the US, they stream Thursday night NFL games, like football games. So Amazon does. So they have a fuckload of DCs that do that. There's also here where I'm at, I know that there's an Amazon rack there that does that specifically for that streaming. And also the rack that we happen to be in where our main DC is, which is in Michigan, they also have a rack there. And so, yes, that's exactly what they do. They put racks in that just rebroadcast those streams to get lower latency to a shitload of viewers. So it's basically a CDN specifically for retransmitting one game a week.
Wow.
But it might be more than that. They might do other stuff with Amazon Prime and like the video thing. But for the most part, it is a shitload of Thursday Night Football stuff.
Just a video relay.
Yeah. Like we did a DC review. Here where I'm at, and I know the guy who runs that DC, and we were walking through like just the power and everything else, and like where we have stuff in there and everything else, which is cool. And and then we walked the AWS rack. I'm like, is that S3? Is that, you know, is that just a, you know, like people who like, because a lot of people can buy an S3 rack and stick it in their local data center, but be only for them. You know what I mean? Like you could buy a Kingnode's S3 rack, or not S3, an AWS rack, right? And just stick it in there, and just you could run EC2 and S3 instances that are in the AWS portal, but it's only in your DC in your locked cabinet. It's like literally a private AWS cloud that you manage through the same portal.
Mm.
So like large US banks do that a lot. Well, they'll buy literally AWS racks, put those in, and they had their own DC that only has their own ship, but it's all managed in the AWS portal. So you can do all the same stuff, but you have 100% control of that. There's nobody next to you. It's 100% your processes. It's fucking awesome, right?
Yeah.
It's fucking cool. So there's a bunch of those there as well. I'm like, is that what that is? He's like, no, that's all football. Like, oh, shit. So I guess when there's streaming football games or something, that might be a place that they do, you know, either delivery, or they might actually use it as a jumping point to send video out or something like that. It's fucking crazy. Like there's so much of that infrastructure that's out there that is so much larger. Like I'm watching a football game on browser, who gives a shit? There is so much fucking infrastructure behind that that's delivering that, that it's always like interesting to run into those things.
I mean, just wandering around a DC is like pretty interesting in itself.
It's like another world.
It's like fucking, you know, when you like walk into the Lambo dealership and you're like, oh, these are all really nice. And then you get back out into your fucking like old Cutlass.
You're looking at those Hetzner nodes like,
just racks of nice shit. And then you like go back to your fucking like Honda Jazz. I'm noticing there is more and more and more like Microtik stuff showing up in the data centers that I've been in.
Oh, really? No shit.
Yeah. Man, like I don't know what Cisco and that do, but because I've never used it, but Microtik have like this multi-chassis link aggregation, which is pretty easy to implement. Easy. Nothing's easy, but you know, not too fucking crazy. Seeing a lot of that, man. Like two routers, two switches all over the place in there. Microtik.
With an umbilical, you mean?
An umbilical. Is that what you mean?
Like between those switches and between those routers, is that what you mean? Like for resilience?
Yeah, so like two inlet routers. So they'll have like two internet connections, one to each router. And then like multi-chassis lagged together. So there's like a joint between the two routers, so they've worked together. And
that's literally what failed in our DC 2 weeks ago.
Oh yeah.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. And then cross connected LACPs to the two switches, and then every chassis has like two connections, one to each switch.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And it's all fucking. But seeing a lot of that, and it's a good implementation on Microtik, and you can use BGP and that type of shit.
I've never used it.
I've not used it. Probably will at some point. But I don't know if we'll use it.
That's not true. I have used Microtik before. I have tried it before, and I hated it.
It's
just because it has its own. I mean, honestly, I shouldn't, because Cisco iOS has its own language. Like you have to know that language, right? And Microtik, you have to know the language.
So Microtik, you can program it via CLI, or you can use their Winbox. Right. And like the you know, how the CLI is structured is how the UI is structured as well, right? So, you know, if you're like /IP, it has all of the, other option or other, let's say, folders in there are like other things when you click on IP the UI. It's got all the same shit. So you can like, you know, pretty easily, you know, // into the thing that you want and then set the options you want. If you know the CLI, and I mean, when their documentation is quite good, like when you're reading through the documentation, it'll give you like the UI and then except for like, you know, they've got case studies where they're like, you know, this is how this will work in this scenario. And then here's all the commands that you would do to make this type of thing work. They'll describe it and then they'll give all the commands, because it just takes up too much room to put like all of the UI screenshots, right? But it's the same anyway, more or less. So
I don't. I mean, from a quality and from a reliability perspective, there's no issues at all. Like I don't have any issues with that. Like I know it's well loved. I know that it's extremely stable and it's extremely well architected and engineered. I think you have to get into that ecosystem to know it. And depending on what you're doing, if that either makes sense or it doesn't.
Have to spend the time learning it.
But
I mean, it's the same with any ecosystem, right? It doesn't matter how well you know, but it is actually it's a big advantage if you understand networking and all that stuff, right?
I mean, but you could replace that with you could fat finger yourself through a PFSense structure and get the entire way there and not fuck yourself over, because there's some safeguards in there, but but
like there's a lot of automatic things that happen in the
background. You don't understand at the same level that you have to understand at Microtech, right? Because you even said, I think you were doing something like you said it was fine. You went home, you're like, ah, fuck. And you got to turn around and drive back, right? That is uniquely like a Cisco Microtech type of experience where there's no guardrails. You know what I mean? Like you could build totally unroutable situation things like, yeah, I'm fucking unrouting nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
you're totally on your own, right?
So learning Microtech is like sometimes you just have to try shit, right?
Yeah.
And
for sure.
And I'm trying shit that's like off to the side in the data center. And then, you know, if it doesn't work, I'll talk about the mechanisms that you can avoid this with, but you know, if you change something and it doesn't work, it'll just fuck it. And you have to go there,
right?
Plug into the fucking thing, into like an unconfigured port to be able to recover it.
It's like,
you can't do it remotely. Yeah.
It's like you ran, go fuck yourself that shell. And the thing's like, all right, sir, I'm going to run it.
I'm out.
come out and pick me up.
So I've probably driven back to the data center 10 times just to unfuck something that I fucked. Just on, you know, in the testing ground type of
the glorious life of the data center operator. So what you're getting into? Yeah, exactly.
The front door, like, you know, the doorman really knows me well now. He's like,
hey, what's going on?
Come to unfuck some shit. Yeah,
Mike, Mike or Dick, what's up?
So there is a thing though. There's a button top right hand corner or top left hand corner in the old Winbox, and you can press it. It says safe mode. So if you apply a configuration and then the router does not receive any more like interaction, and Winbox disconnects, it'll be like, well, they fuck something, so we'll like undo that.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I never click it.
I was gonna say, and yet you've gone 10 times to the data center
because it's not like it won't be like you press the button, right? And then everything you do until you unpress the button will revert if you break something. So you have to be like constantly on off. So
you can't, right. Exactly.
Yeah. So when you're like doing a lot of configuration, trying some things out, and then it messes up and then reverts all of that configuration, well, I just wasted half a fucking day.
Oh, that's so funny, dude.
Yeah. You'd think it would just revert the last thing that you did, but no.
Well, you could probably make incremental saves in there, and then does that require, what's the reload process? Is it like, it doesn't reboot or anything, right? It just reloads the table.
No, it just
dumps the ARP table
and reverts it, and then like you know, that's it. Because it's, you know, when you're dealing with VLANs and stuff, there's a lot of nuance in VLANs and in Microtech, they've got a lot of hardware offloading now, depending on your switch chips and stuff. So that's mostly what I've been messing around with, is the hardware offload. And the way that you do the VLANs with hardware offloading is completely different to the way you would do it without hardware offloading. I guess that's just how
it
is.
Do you really need that even at those 25 gigabit speeds?
Oh man, if you use the CPU to route, like the CPUs in Microtech stuff, when they've got
it's like a small ARM chip,
bulletproof fucking switch chips, like the CPU is dog shit. It's like a fucking 100 hertz potato. Like it's not. It's like 800. They're usually like at 800 hertz ARM chip, but they do not cope well if you like don't use your hardware offloading for big loads. They'll handle some stuff, but even if you have to look at the block diagram when you're buying Microtech switches. So bring up the block diagram, think about what you want to do, and see if this particular product is the right one for you. Because, for example, like if you buy a 100 gig switch, right, and it's got a little Ethernet port over here, and you'd be like, oh yeah, I can like have an uplink to my internet provider, router, right? To grab the internet, and then, you know, all of those things that want to talk to each other on the 100 gig network, fine, for storage or whatever, we'll be able to get like a 1 gig connection to the internet or something, right?
Yeah.
But that 1 gig connection might be on a completely different path outside of the switch chip, and it will be off the side of the CPU. So any then all internet traffic then is being routed through that, through the CPU and not the switch chip. So
you're not doing a good job selling that whole infrastructure.
But that's not the way you would do it, right? So the way you would do it is you'd have a bunch of VLANs on your 100 gig network, and then one of those VLANs would be on an uplink to your switch.
Sure. Yeah.
So you wouldn't use that port. But if you're like, you know, you just, I don't know, and I'll just plug this in because that seems like a good option for this dumb shit I want to do, then, you'd probably do that, and you'd be like, why is my CPU always pegged?
Why am I doing what's happening? Why is it all slow?
Yeah. But if you configure everything correctly, then your CPU will basically be doing nothing the entire time. It's just all switch chip. And those fucking things are stout, man. They definitely they definitely match the switch chips to what you're getting out of that. Like, you'll be able to saturate every port.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I believe that. Yeah, there's so little overhead, right? You're not like, I mean, all these things are the same way, right? Like, they're so fucking optimized.
For that. For the ports that are in it, and they're like, this is the switch chip we need for that.
Yeah, yeah. What we do on iOS is exactly the same. Like, it's fucking miserable, but it's miserable because it is so fucking optimized.
Yeah, like 100%.
And there's literally billions and trillions and whatever number of packets flowing through these things globally in really really high critical locations that have been optimized for those specific situations, right? So like it's a high learning curve, and there's a high amount of, you have to know what the fuck you're doing because the stakes are so high in some of those types of situations, right? So I get it.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Alora, by the way, still not moving.
Really?
Since we've been on. Yeah, it stopped there at 2 hours ago. Somebody just said, will future upgrades take this long, or is it an exception?
I fucking hate whinging.
Welcome to Cosmos. Nobody knows. I mean,
it's what you're doing. Like, they're doing a migration. Like,
they're doing a pretty large migration. Yeah. Yeah.
So
we must be close. I have 34 peers. Actually, no, I have 27 peers. That's my limit. So I have enough peers. I haven't brought up TM Top or anything else like that, or PV Top. Shout out to friend of the show, Blockpain. I don't know what's going on.
Reappear.
I know he's a good dude. One of my favorite people in this industry for sure. Friend of the show.
I guess this Alora is just taking a while because everyone's probably got potatoes.
I thought it was at the head of that list. Kenny from the Allure team said that they were a couple when we were doing like this thing where it was going through the number of pages associated to a, what was that? That was a some sort of account migration, right? Is that what it was? I don't know what the hell it was exactly, but and there's a bunch of pages through there, and we got to 991 pages, and they were a couple ahead of me, and I was like, motherfucker. I was like, how'd that happen? Usually run the fastest hardware on this shit. Although this node is doing like 25 other things, so maybe that has something to do with it.
Man, I've got good hardware on this, and I was still at least 100 pages behind you. So
yeah, I don't know why. Maybe I don't know when it started earlier. I don't know.
What are you running it on?
This is these are all 7950Xs.
Yeah, this is 7950X3D. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
All right, man. Angry about that.
I don't know.
Hard drive configuration probably.
RAID zeros for life.
RAID 0, baby. You can't run RAID 0 with Alora. It doesn't do remote signing.
What do you mean? I don't care. I have a copy of the key. As long as I can destroy the box, I don't give a shit.
It's a testnet, motherfucker.
It doesn't do degen, Horcrux.
Don't believe so.
I don't believe so. I haven't done anything with it yet. Although my signing on Alora is like unbelievable. I don't even know why. I think it's because I have good peers and I've never restarted this box. I think it's what it is. I think that's all it is. Your signing, my signing, there's only like two other nodes that are like at 99%. Everybody else is at 40%. Like, it's a fucking bloodbath on this chain, except for like a couple of us. I don't know. Yeah, it has to be peering, because it has to be peering.
I feel like I miss a decent amount on Alora.
You miss more than I do. Hat tip. But compared to the rest, oh my God, it's not even... You're not even in the same ballpark. Like,
it's not so bad. Yeah.
It's not bad at all. Like, it's like we're within a percent of each other or something like that. But everybody else is like, it's like, it is a bloodbath on that chain. somebody from was it Cosmos Station or something, built a small Grafana dashboard that showed whatever it was, 1,000 blocks. Yeah.
And they're like, oh, look at that dashboard. And we're like, oh, fuck, don't look at it.
It was 100% red. It was brutal.
It looked so awful. Fucking miserable. It was just like,
it was awful.
I see red. Shit, man.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, news? Actually, well, I think, you know, something that affected you and I to some degree, ASRock 0-day. IPMI ring any bells? Actually, they probably didn't send you that same email they sent me, because they actually wanted a password for the IPMI. So IP projects, I'm going to fucking name them because they've been total cunts. So, man, I was badgering them so hard for a refund for the last month.
So the backstory is that did I bring this to you? I think I brought this to you, right? This is on me.
No, I mentioned it to you and you hadn't had a problem yet. And I was like, man, this fucking
No. Boss. I think I introduced them to you though, right? I said I found this provider that blah blah blah. I think this is maybe.
Condition. I don't know.
I think so. So one thing other good node operators do is that they find diversity in terms of bare metal providers, because most of the ecosystems and a bunch of different ecosystems run on the lowest possible configurations, and not lowest, but also cheapest, and also there's a lot heavy amount of centralization. So that might be Hetzner is obviously a big one. OVH is a big one, although I think a little bit of a better operator. There's other ones, Contabo and like Vulture and things like that, where you have a pretty large organization that delivers bare metal nodes globally at either a fixed price point. Hetzner, I mean, is an extremely capable operator as well. Like, we have no issues with them. It's just the fact that it's so centralized that when we provide services for other teams, we want diversity in that. So, like, we use some smaller providers that I won't name because I don't want everybody using them. But we use some smaller providers in the U.S. here. We use some in Europe. We use some in Asia Pacific, both in like North and Japan, and also like Southeast Asia, like Singapore. And the reason for that is because we want to have diversity where if one of those goes down, like if Hetzner's goes down, which has happened before, or they've had routing issues, you have a shitload of fucking VP that falls off and you can see who's running what. And also we want to have diversity where, regardless of any issue, if AWS goes down or GCP or anything else, that we're providing value, right? Like, well, that's RCP, like RPC data, or that's validator assigning or whatever else. And so that's really important to us. And so to that end, one of the things that we're trying to find is another good provider in Germany, which by far Hetzner and OVH are by far the largest, I think. And so we're trying to find somebody else that might have nodes within Frankfurt or Hamburg or even Berlin that provide services in a distributed way that we like. And so we found this company IP Projects,
specifically 7950s at the time. And with, for Epic 4000s. Yeah.
Correct. Cause a lot of them also run like old Intel bullshit, right? Like they charge way too much for like this fucking
2388, fucking $500 a month. You're like, fuck
that. Exactly. Or some bullshit fucking dual CPU Xeon that doesn't, it has like really low clock speeds and it's fucking 2017 hardware. Like nobody gives a shit about that.
Like a 740.
Plus we want like good data.
Xeon Gold, 61.
I want to know what data centers are in. We know what their pairing is. We want to know what level data center that is. I want to understand the support structure. Like there's a whole fucking checklist that we go through. And IP Projects was one of the ones that I kind of like, because it was a smaller team, good data centers. They were slow to provision things, but I don't really care about that too much, as long as like there's like they know what's going on and things like that. And then both of us had issues that were 100% exactly the same.
All of our issues have been the same. So it started off with the hard drives. They use consumer hard drives, which is bullshit.
I don't enjoy that, but if I know it's disposable, then I know what to put there.
Yeah, but like, you know, you're asking them to replace hard drives after fucking for sure. 3 months, because they're just absolutely shot to shit,
which they do not like doing.
No,
they do not. They're not.
They don't like doing anything. Like, no. They don't like admitting they have issues, and they don't like fixing them. Yeah,
we'll get to that part. Yeah.
So hard drive is always an issue there. And we were actually just starting to cancel servers because of the hard drives. because they are like, they're not the cheapest. Like they are probably 2x what you'd pay for a Hetzner box for the same thing. And I was like, well, you know, Hetzner, while a lot of people use it and there's like a little bit of stigma around using Hetzner, they're good to use for certain things.
They're good to use. Yeah,
I'd use them all fucking day long for free RPC because people are just out there hammering that shit.
Yeah.
I don't care about it too much.
We use them for RPC as well, but I gotta have, I can't just rely on
you
that.
You can't just have them, right? You gotta have diversity for many different reasons. And one of those reasons, particularly if you're using these for like validators, is you need to have your keys spread around as well. You can't just have you can't have your keys on a public server because if something like you don't know if someone can just walk up to that server and plug into it. Like you don't know where it is.
Spoiler.
Yeah. And if you've used the IPMI, right, and you've stayed logged in, don't do that. Always log out of your IPMI sessions. And then someone just goes and plugs into the box, then they can just continue that session, right? If they wanted. Yeah. So because you don't know. You don't know where the fuck it could be on someone's desk. Like it's some cloud shit somewhere. It could be an installation in the middle of fucking Pitt Street. I don't know. So who the fuck knows? So anyway, where was I going with that bullshit?
Ransomware.
Oh yeah. So you know, security keys. You need diversity around the place. And key sharding and all that type of stuff. So anyway, the moral of that story is don't leave anything important on a box that you rent publicly unless you have your own shit. Anything if you do have keys, make sure they're sharded around the place. Otherwise, use specific key servers that you control somewhere or in something that you know has a lot better security, like DigitalOcean or something that uses, you know, VMs and that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, so not only the hard drives was fucking annoying, but we had an issue where one of our boxes was ransomware. So this was an ongoing thing. We lost access to this box, right? Contacted the
disappeared. Stop reporting as Zavix.
Yeah,
it's gone, right? Like gone. What happened? Nobody knows.
Yeah. So just disappeared. See you later. Yeah. Stopped reporting, you know. We're just like, well, what the fuck happened to this thing? Obviously it's everything that I know both SERP and I run is redundant everywhere, right? So it didn't make a difference operationally. It was just fucking annoying. So into their web platform, onto the IPMI, can't log into the IPMI. Okay, that's weird. So, you know, is there a motherboard issue? Is there a power issue? Like, what's the deal? The screen will come up, but you can't log in. I haven't changed any credentials, so what's going on? Contact the help team, and they're like, oh, yeah, sometimes the motherboards just fuck out. So we'll replace a motherboard for you. Replaces the motherboard, still can't log into SSH, but the machine's coming up because you can see on the IPMI comes up. So the management is working, can't log into it, but you know it's there. So you know the motherboard's alive. And in this case, they changed the motherboard, then reset the IPMI password. Then I could log in to the IPMI, right? So I could use like the remote session over IPMI, like the KVM. Which is just, it's like a keyboard and mouse and a monitor remotely, right? Directly. So you're not over SSH or anything. Still couldn't SSH into the system, which I thought was a little bit weird. Found out why. Log into the bloody, the KVM session, over the IPMI. Fucking ransomware everywhere. So
all the files
I raised this with through the ticket system with their help, and they say, not us. And I'm like, will you not even entertain the idea that you may have an issue somewhere, right? And they're like, no, it's not us, it's you. I'm like, we've got our SSH fully locked down. The only way that there could be like a breach through SSH for us is a zero-day attack on SSH. No one is using that shit on fucking a Kingnode's node, right? With no value on it whatsoever. So anyway, I'm like, you know, can someone gain access to the system? Like maybe I didn't log out of the session for some reason. Like I don't remember ever accessing over KVM previously.
Right.
And I was like, you know, could someone gain physical access and plug into it and then do this? And they're like, absolutely not. Started running off stats of like 45 armed guards and fucking all the rest of the bullshit that they were going on with. And then I'm like, okay, so like, you know, is there, maybe there's a vulnerability in the system where someone can get in through the IPMI or, you know, this type of thing. And they're like, no, absolutely not. You got brute forced. I'm like, you can't even log into my system with a fucking password. Like, it doesn't work that way. Like, it's locked down. Yeah.
Brute force a 4096 bit key over and over.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, it's fucking, this is
okay, dude. You know, thanks.
It's not me. It's you. And they're like, no, it's not. And I'm like, well, okay. Canceled that server. I didn't even bother trying to recover. I just started canceling fucking servers. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
They went one by one. Eventually, all of my servers were were gone, and can only assume that they were all fucking ransomware. So I just turned them all off and fucking deleted them all. Tried to get a refund for the month, and they're like, oh, we're not responsible for fucking 0-day attacks. So they sent me an email. They're like, urgent.
When did you get this? Today?
Like yesterday or the day before?
You'd forward that to me.
Urgent. We need your IPMI password so that we can like change your configuration so you're behind a proxy. And I'm like, dude.
I thought it was behind a proxy.
And they're like, what have you changed it to? And I'm like I said before, I've never changed a fucking password at all on IPMI.
Your shit is owned.
Your shit's fucked. You sort it out. So anyway, I'm like, you cunts should give me a fucking refund because I haven't had any of my servers for a month from something you refuse to fucking investigate. And so now
is this an actual ASRock issue or this is an IP projects issue?
They're saying that it's a 0-day on the ASRock IPMI.
Okay. But how would that be in the clear? That should not be in the clear. There's no reason for that to be in the clear. Meaning, like,
I don't know,
not be
because they kept telling me that their fucking IPMI is behind a proxy and you have to go in and click the button on the website.
Or they have one client that somehow gets into the proxy and then from there they can get to every other fucking IPMI IP address.
Well, I don't know, because their solution that they were telling me was, oh, we've just put fucking, in one day we've put 300 IPMIs behind the proxy. I'm like,
What the fuck was it before? Yeah.
So you just opened the internet before?
So we only had three boxes.
I wonder
boxes
how there. That got hacked.
We only had three boxes there. One of those, exactly the same thing happened where it just went offline. We were arguing with them. I never got back into the box. They wanted to charge me $60 over the weekend to reset the IPMI password.
They sent me the same email. They're like, oh yeah, there's a fee for like coming out. I'm like, don't worry about it. Just fucking do it when you get in the office. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. So I told them to go fuck themselves and I canceled the box. And that's when Michael yelled at me, the CEO. He yelled at me over email and all this kind of shit because blah, blah, blah. And then it happened to a second box, which is also just an RPC server. It wasn't the end of the world. I didn't really care. There's nothing on there. That box, I was like, hey, this is during business hours. Like, I can't get into this thing. I never touched the IPMI password. There is we have no open SSH ports at all. There's nothing open on our, the only thing that we have open on our nodes is P2P ports. Everything else is locked. There's nothing. Even RPC ports, those are locked down IP addresses only to Cloudflare, other types of things. The only thing you can actually get to is a P2P port. So I'm guessing that's not the issue. Everything else is locked down. There's nothing you can get into. So I'm like, it's impossible. Like, you know, blah, blah, blah. So they want to charge me $15. Or 15 euros, $15, I don't know what it was, to reset that password. I said, do it. Fucking, I'll pay it. Put it in there. Add it to my bill. Do it right now. So the guy went and reset the password, sent it to me. I got in there. I took like a screenshot, sent it back to him and said, this thing's fucking ransomware. What the fuck are you doing? And they said, I don't know what the hell they replied to me. Like I have no open SSH ports. They never replied to me again. Actually, that's what, they never replied. That was it. It was quiet. Like, so I didn't cancel that box yet. It's still running because I have it till the 31st because I'm waiting for the third one. The third one, I proactively went into the IPMI. I changed that password, which is in their portal, from a 7-character password to a 32-character password or more. I don't even know what the hell it is. I just reset that IPMI password and nothing's happened with that box yet because I assume that they were brute forcing it. That's what I assumed. I assumed they were brute forcing IPMI passwords is what my guess was after two of these fucking things happened. So I just locked that down unless there's another, but there's also another admin box that they, or another login that they use internally So they might be, who knows? They might be fucking IPP123 for all I fucking know what their password is. So that one is absolutely not that important. None of these are important to me, but it's still fucking annoying. It's fucking annoying. So I'm waiting for some new boxes to come out because I'm moving this shit off. And then I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to go after them and say, what the hell?
I'm completely done. I've canceled every single one. Just turned them off.
Well, they haven't come back to me and said like, oh, by the way, that's the other thing. It's like, I haven't heard jack fucking shit about them. Oh yeah, by the way, there's a 0 day here and this is our issue. Like,
I'll read you the email nothing. They sent me.
Zero.
I'll read you the email.
Zero.
So
tell me what the email says.
All right. So they sent me this email. There's currently a critical vulnerability.